Good. Thanks very much. As one might expect in a conference devoted to emergency communications in the wake of two major hurricanes in the United States and the constant threat of terrorist attacks and other types of disasters, it's natural to assume that much of the attention is going to be on local governments and first responders and all of the coordination activities that have to deal with immediate response to a major catastrophe. And this is as it should be. However, and in fact, in the case of my own company, Oak Ridge Technology Connection, we have an alliance with an organization called NCOR, which is an outgrowth of the Gilmore Commission, which dealt with American responses to weapons of mass issues of weapons of mass destruction, for which we work a great deal with the states and with local governments on all forms of emergency preparedness. On the other hand, what I'm here to do today is to complicate our lives even further by making an argument that emergency communications is not only a local issue, a regional issue, or even a national issue, but is in fact a global or international issue. Many emergency communications are indeed international in scope. In addition to experiencing a major event like we did in the Gulf Coast this year, let's not forget that it was only about a year ago when the world had a major earthquake west of Sumatra and a major tsunami, which took over 100 times as many lives as the Katrina disaster over a much wider dispersed area. And so what I'd like to do is to just discuss a few concepts about how emergency communications are being approached and some of the limitations that are taking place at the international level. The organization that is most concerned with coordinating both standards, spectrum allocation, and other duties is, of course, the International Telecommunication Union. However, as much as we would like to see standards developed at the global level, it has not proceeded as quickly and as effectively as we might expect. This is in part because you've got additional complications amongst all of the ITU members, as well as a whole variety of tasks layered on to national issues that may not often get the type of focus and attention that that we need. As a political scientist, I often remind myself that when the National Security Act was passed in 1947, the lines of authority amongst all the agencies that were put together to make the what we know today as the Department of Defense really wasn't straightened out until the Goldwater-Nichols Act in 1986. So it was practically a 40-year period before all these agencies could actually understand what their respective roles and missions were. Now we have a Department of Homeland Security, which is being pushed together in much the same way, and I'm sure that none of us want to wait another 40 years for that to get straightened out. Well, likewise, at the international level, we have 189 member states, and due to privatization and the introduction of competition in the telecommunications sector worldwide, there are now over 700 members of the ITU from the private sector that can participate in various forums for the development of standards and other activities. For those of you who are in this business and do this for a living, please bear with me. For those of you who are not familiar with how this works at the international level, the ITU basically has three legs on the stool. One is the ITUT, which is a standards bureau, which develops network and other types of standards activities. Second, a radio communication bureau, which is primarily done to coordinate and allocate spectrum on a global basis. And then finally, a development bureau, which deals with technical assistance to developing countries. One of the things that is in stark contrast to the way that we define emergency communications in the U.S. is that the ITU defines emergency communications almost exclusively in terms of surge capability. Glenn Nash in the keynote address said, well, emergency communications is something that occurs every day. He's right about that, but at the international level, it tends to be defined in a very, very different way. It includes not just the ability of emergency responders or other organizations to work together, but the ITU also defines this in a much broader way, including normal personal communications, including the restoration of business communications, as well as communication amongst government and other authorities, mass media from notifications from authorities to citizens, and likewise feedback on what needs to be done in a disaster situation. And they include long-range activities such as prevention and detection, the short-term warnings, and also the in the aftermath relief efforts. And I'll just talk briefly about each one of these. In 1991, through the auspices of the ITU, an international treaty was actually hammered out, which established the basis for international cooperation in particularly the use of terminal equipment for disaster relief operations. And again, it's not just a case where the U.S. might have a coordination issue with Mexico when the next hurricane hits the Gulf of Mexico, but also we have to remember that the U.S. sends relief efforts to other parts of the world, and therefore interoperability needs to occur on this basis. I mean, even in the case of Fairfax County, which has an excellent earthquake response team, they go all over the world. They've been in Georgia, they've been in Southeast Asia, they've been in Latin America, many, many different places. And so the Tampere Convention, which is named after a town in Finland, was put in place to begin to frame those issues and develop standardization. At the 2003 World Radio Conference, the 2003 WARC, there were, for the first time, resolutions passed which set aside certain portions of the radio spectrum for emergency communications. And finally, there's been some additional standardization work, such as the portability of third-generation terminals, so that emergency response teams, NGOs, which are now very, very important in relief efforts, can get into places without having to go through type acceptance and other forms of communications issues that might delay a response. In the prediction and detection area, let's not forget that there is an important element that's played by Earth observation and meteorological satellite systems that can look at not only long-range trends, but give not so much warning to local areas, but general regional warnings to larger areas of the Earth's surface. Like there are seismic sensors in various parts of the world, like in the North Pacific, those are now being implemented in Southeast Asia to give more ample warning. Even if it's an hour, like in the case of the December 2004 tsunami, that's still plenty of time to walk 2 kilometers from the beach. So as long as you can do this on a regional basis effectively, it can help immensely. And that then creates a communications problem about how to after that data is collected and analyzed by people who know what they're doing, to get it to the right decision-making authorities that can take appropriate action. So here the results, I would have to say, are mixed. There have been some very good developments and some others that obviously gaps that need to be filled, such as in the South Pacific and South Asian area. In the case of short-term alerts, here the record is mixed as well, although in the case of natural disasters, particularly severe storms and pollution disasters that may require immediate warning, all of the major public services play a part in this. In fact, just to go back to where I live in Fairfax County, there is an excellent email system which any member of the public can subscribe to and get up-to-the-minute alerts on a wide variety of emergencies for which you can pick and choose the ones you want to listen to. When that now gets extended to the international level, you do get issues of compatibility that you find in any kind of aggregation where networks are being put together. But the interoperability problems, again, tend to be even greater. At the same time, in terms of near-term solutions, we have, I believe later in the program, someone coming from Inmarsat, two other speakers, one from Iridium and Globalstar. We have some excellent satellite networks that are already there that can provide a superb infrastructure for the kinds of communications that we're talking about. In terms of relief, here the record is actually a little bit better. If one looks at the relief efforts in response to the December 2004 earthquake and tsunami in South Asia, one finds that all of the satellite-based and terrestrial-based mobile services played an extremely important and vital role in getting relief efforts done very quickly, including amateur radio. In a lot of countries, particularly in Sri Lanka and in India, there's actually a fairly well-developed amateur HF radio system that still exists. And while the coverage is not comprehensive, many of these systems were used to surviving on intermittent power and other kinds of outages, and so were very robust simply because they already developed in a third world environment and were able to be used quite effectively. Also, at the back end of disasters, in addition to just the warning function, Earth observation satellites are extremely useful for damage assessment so that when roads, bridges, other infrastructure are out, relief crews can be directed to the right place at the right time. This is a very similar exercise to what the DoD is used to doing in bomb damage assessment, where you fly over a target before and after and decide whether or not you need to go back again. Well, the problem is almost identical in the case of a relief effort, where essentially what you're trying to do is to look at where resources can be deployed most effectively in terms of saving life and restoring services. So in all of these areas, the ITU and other international agencies need to be, I believe, more focused on the combination of various types of terrestrial and satellite communications that can be most effectively layered and take on different roles and functions. Now, in the World Radio Conference in 2003, the ITU, as you may know, is divided into three radio regions. Region 2 is in the Western Hemisphere, so that's all of North and South America. And two bands in the 700 megahertz, 700 and 800 megahertz area were allocated for further study in emergency communications, as well as in the 4.9 gigahertz band for microwave and other mobile communications. As you can see, in the other two ITU regions, Region 1, which is primarily Western Europe and the Russian Federation, and Region 3, which covers the Middle East, Asia, and the Pacific, the bands do overlap but are not quite the same. And so if one is trying to respond on a global basis, this needs to have quite a bit more focus as different teams go around the world trying to mitigate disasters. And it's not just the U.S. going other places. I mean, if one looks at Katrina, there were foreign teams that came in from France and other countries, and their equipment also needs to operate in a way that will make their jobs effective. And so, again, my argument that this is actually a global problem. And also two recommendations in the M series of recommendations that came out of the Radio Communication Bureau to look at, number one, the effective and fast cross-border circulation of terminal equipment, and in particular the third generation, or what the ITU calls IMT 2000 terminals, which deal with third generation cellular. I also believe that the non-governmental organizations, the NGOs, will play an increasingly important part. If, again, you look back at the December 2004 tsunami, the actual success story was in internet-type services, the bloggers who were able to keep information flowing, cut through the fog of war, if you will. And that was actually an extremely important activity. So we might want to look more at things like voice over IP or other types of web-based services that might be very robust in a disaster situation. And again, I've listed a couple more of these. In the future, there's a lot of work to be done. This may actually focus national policies in a way that will be able to aggregate U.S. policies because of the foreign policy implications of doing this. In particular, proposals that are coming out of the ITU for things like a special country code or area codes that deal specifically with information services for disaster relief. And I've listed a couple of others here as well. This is a continuing exercise. It will probably be perpetual in nature, but it's one that I think deserves our attention as we approach these issues on a global basis. Thanks very much.